This episode contains descriptions of natural disaster events that may be disturbing for some listeners. Please listen with care. You're listening to Stories from the Epicenter, a podcast about the experience and memory of the Loma Prieta earthquake in Santa Cruz County, California. I'm Daniel Story. One of the themes we've traced throughout this series is memory. The complex ways that people recall life-altering experiences like the Loma Prieta earthquake, and how those memories are preserved and passed on. In this episode, you'll hear about one other commemorative initiative in Santa Cruz that deals directly with the question of preserving and sharing memory, a project called Epicenter, which was launched in 2019 by Santa Cruz Public Libraries and spearheaded by librarians Jennifer Hooker and Kathleen Aston. In the weeks and months leading up to the 30th anniversary, they collected video interviews with a variety of Santa Cruz citizens who were present for the quake. And, as they'll soon tell you, the project is still ongoing. In fact, if you've enjoyed hearing others share about their experiences in this podcast, you might consider reaching out to Epicenter to share your own story about the earthquake. Now, just before we dive in, I want to quickly note the fact that this episode is, in fact, the last episode in this series. And if you listen right to the end, you'll hear a brief series wrap-up by me. But if you don't make it that far, I want to say now, we appreciate you hanging with us, and we hope the story we've told has been meaningful, imparted some kind of new knowledge, or at least provoked some thought. In 2020, we need all the resources, physical and emotional, that we can get. And maybe, just maybe, this podcast has sent out some positive vibes. Okay, enough from me. Without further ado, here's Jennifer and Kathleen with episode 10, Epicenter.
Yeah, people who have been through the earthquake will tell earthquake stories. Everyone who's been through it is going to tell an earthquake story. But it's like telling somebody about their dreams. It's a very personal experience. And generally, the person you're telling can't wait for you to shut up so they can tell about their earthquake story. You know, it's very individual. But if you'd like to hear mine, I'd be happy to tell you.
I am Kathleen Aston, and I am the collections manager at the Santa Cruz Museum of Natural History. And I have been an on-call librarian for the Santa Cruz Public Libraries, where I have worked in different capacities for several years.
My name is Jennifer Hooker. I am a librarian with the Santa Cruz Public Libraries, and I do programming and reference, and in this case, oral histories.
And we are here today to talk about Epicenter, an oral history project of the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake, of which we are co-creators, brought to you by the Santa Cruz Public Libraries and many community partners.
Epicenter was a project that came about as a way to preserve the stories of the individuals who lived in Santa Cruz County during the earthquake, and that was where the epicenter was. So we wanted to find a way to capture these stories and preserve them.
And that part that Jen said is really important, because when we were thinking about the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake and we were thinking about what kind of community response we wanted to have as a community-oriented organization at the libraries, we were thinking about how, in many regards, the Loma Prieta earthquake is often seen through the lens of being this larger, more regional phenomenon. Now, there certainly have been oral histories about it. Caltrans did a huge project. There's a couple other projects. The really robust oral history program at UCSC did a couple of interviews, but we really wanted to make sure that we were gathering more of the story from the perspective of the folks who lived here so close to the epicenter. That's like a big part of our shared motivation. Jen, do you want to talk a little bit about your personal motivations for being involved in this project?
Yeah, so my motivations are twofold. I come at it from a professional perspective as well as a personal perspective. I am the daughter of someone who worked in San Francisco at the time of the earthquake. So I grew up hearing a lot of stories about how traumatic an experience that was for my mother. And also that sort of fed into my interest in natural disasters and emergency preparedness and disaster response. So in my free time, I like to volunteer with different organizations that help people prepare for emergencies like earthquakes, and also who respond to natural disasters, house fires, pandemics, volunteer organizations that do disaster response. And as a professional, I am really interested in hearing stories and sharing stories. In theory, every book is just a story. So having real stories from real people who may not ever get the chance to share their story outside of their personal bubble. You talk to anyone who has lived in Santa Cruz for more than 30 years, and they have an earthquake story. And I think that information is really valuable. I think it's valuable in a cultural heritage type of way. And I think that those stories need to be preserved and shared, because there's a lot you can learn from them.
I completely agree with the importance of storytelling for understanding and building community, and especially community resiliency. This project is not my first time working with oral histories. When I was in college, I worked for a dialectologist who was looking at how people's accent fluctuations were expressed as they were discussing the way gentrification had affected their neighborhoods. And so that was my first introduction into learning on a larger level than just the individual, but a more structural level, learning from oral histories, which was really instructive. And so part of the thing that I am interested in looking at in this project is how communities respond to disaster and do or don't build resiliency, how they carry trauma, how that gets communicated, and how it does or doesn't stick around. And in particular, for things like this, I'm really interested in the human relationship to nature as it is mediated by these sort of disastrous encounters, right? Because nature itself doesn't necessarily think of earthquake as a disaster. It becomes a disaster when we relate it to harm to humans and human communities. And a big part of that for me is also thinking about the sort of slow burn disaster of human-caused climate change that we are experiencing right now, and how that is going to interact with communities and community resiliency into the future. Part of what I'm looking at when I'm looking at a project like Epicenter, part of why I think it's so cool to be part of it, is to explore those themes on a different scale.
I think it's also worth pointing out that Kathleen and I are both from the Bay Area, and yet we were both not born when the earthquake hit. So we came to Santa Cruz, we've sort of adopted it as a second home, and we have both recognized through our various works and interactions with people in the community that this is a really integral part of the identity here. And we wanted to get at the meat of that with this project. And it being the 30th anniversary in 2019, it seemed like an optimal time to pursue this project.
Jen and I were given the opportunity through the Santa Cruz Public Libraries to propose an innovative project through this process that they call Innovation Grants. And the idea is to give staff the opportunity to try out different kinds of ideas, ways of serving or connecting to the community that the library previously hadn't engaged in, almost a pilot style thing. And so we were like, this is perfect. This is a new kind of program for the library. In some ways, the library was already working on the Veterans History Project, which is part of a bigger Library of Congress initiative to document the stories of our veterans. And so we thought it would be cool to do a more locally based, but also focused project like this. And we proposed the grant, and we got funding, which supported equipment and hours and some other technical stuff. Another really important part of thinking about the logistics of this project was, how do we get stories? We'll talk about this a little bit more later on, but we really wanted to try to make sure to get a representative set of responses from the community. We were able to advertise. We got funding through the Innovation Grant to do so. We posted things. We cross-listed with other organizations. And we really did, Jen did an incredible amount of community programming that we partnered, we basically used that as an advertising tool, which is really helpful. So we still have more work to do in this regard, but we were trying to think about the different channels through which we were soliciting these stories so as to get a representative perspective from the community, which is a project that is still ongoing. Do you want to share a little bit about those community programs?
Totally. So the majority of what I do as a librarian is programming. So I tends to be adult programming. So programming for anyone over the age of 18, including seniors. And in I mentioned earlier, my volunteer work, I work with a local emergency preparedness network. I am CERT trained, and CERT is Community Emergency Response Teams. We worked with American Red Cross, and I reached out my feelers to all of those groups that I have a tie to, and I brought them in and I said, hey, will you do a presentation for one of our 10 library branches about some aspect of emergency preparedness or disaster response? And at those programs, I talked about Epicenter, and I solicited stories, and we got quite a few people on board to share their stories from attending those programs. I mean, if you ever go to a meeting of people who are invested in community emergency response, they are going to be the first ones to offer to teach you literally anything about how to prepare for an emergency. They are the most community-oriented people I've ever met, and they really do care about making sure everyone is safe and protected. And so when I approached people and said, hey, I'm with the library, we're working on this project, we want you to come talk about equine evac, so evacuating large animals during things like wildfires and earthquakes, or PG&E, we want you to come talk about building an emergency bag. These people were just really responsive. They were very happy to do it. And we got a lot of really interesting people to come, and we got a lot of really interesting feedback from those programs.
As someone who attended several of those programs, my feedback is that they were excellent. I learned a lot, had a lot of fun.
My younger son was 13, and his birthday is October 13th. So it was Friday the 13th, his 13th birthday. And so we had a Friday the 13th party, and we did all the superstitious things like having a black cat cross your path and lean a ladder up, and everybody walked under it. And I found these little mirrors that some Goodwill store for, less than a buck each. And we lined them up, and the kids threw rocks at them and broke the mirrors. And I mean, we did everything we could think of to break the superstitions about the 13th.
Right.
And so he was convinced that he had caused the earthquake by having doing those things on his birthday.
Oh.
We got so many incredible stories as a part of this project. It's really, I would say that this story about the 13-year-old being worried that they caused the earthquake, especially given my interests in this, relationship between humans and the natural world, it's one of my favorites, but there were so many good ones. And the whole interview process itself was a really rich experience that was a privilege to be a part of. And it swung wildly from being very fun and very conversational to being pretty somber and, figuring out ways to give people the space to tell their stories, even while those stories were so traumatic. Wanting to elicit answers, elicit participation, and still be respectful was challenging at times.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're interviewing someone about something that is such a big, traumatic, physical and emotional event, you want to be sensitive to those triggers in people, and you don't know someone's experience or what might trigger them until you're in the thick of it. You know, they don't tell you, I'm going to talk about X, Y, and Z. You really just, you introduce yourself and you get into the interview. So there were some real surprises in interviewing these people about what they actually went through. And some people were very calm and collected during their interviews. You know, they had told their stories probably hundreds of times, and it wasn't as loaded for them anymore. And some of the people, you could really tell that this is not something that they talked about often, that they still had some even admitted PTSD, and giving them this opportunity of catharsis to share the story in a way that felt like it wasn't sensationalizing their pain, but giving it space. So in recording all of these videos, Kathleen and I really noticed a lot of overlap with these stories.
One of the themes that we thought was kind of interesting, especially when you're thinking about this experience that is so fundamentally sensory in a way that we're not used to experiencing the world around us. It's a big break in the sense of physical, natural stimuli that you're normally getting. So we thought it was interesting the different ways that people really emphasized the sense-based memory of the experience. And one of those classic ones is the notion of earthquake weather.
The weather was so strange that day. It really was. It was like thick air and like hot, and it was October, even though we're kind of used to that warmer, you know, in the fall, yeah. Kind of like more warm, you know, after the summer. But it was strange. You know, there's something weird about that.
Do earthquakes have a weather? Is that a thing? And, you know, from and perspectives on that range, from people thinking that the Loma Prieta earthquake was the origin of earthquake weather, it seems like it definitely was the origin of that concept as it was used in this community in a lot of ways. But that, I did a little bit of reading, actually went back to like classical antiquity. Like people were like, oh, earthquakes are like popping out of the earth because of the hot weather down there, you know? Similarly, the sounds, the different like really amazing ways that people were trying to describe the sounds. We don't have a lot of words for the sounds of like auditory phenomenon. We don't even have like a lot of, I feel sometimes, good enough words for music. And so the ways people were really, you know, they felt it was important to convey the sound of what was happening.
The first thing was hearing the sound coming through the trees. And my daughter said it sounded like rushing water, but for me, I heard squeaking wood. It was going, coming as a wave over the mountains toward us. And that was just like, what is this?
Similarly, the smells of the earthquake as well, which is a sense that I feel like we talk about even less.
Down on Pacific immediately after the earthquake and for days afterwards, it had an absolutely unique and distinct smell. It's a smell that is basically the creation of 100-year-old dust and dirt and bricks crumbling and whatever. I drove up to San Francisco, I got into the marina, and I opened the door of the car, and there was the smell. It was exactly the same smell because they had old buildings and dust and whatever, and I've never smelled that aroma before or since.
Another common refrain from folks who we interviewed was the emphasis on the impact of the aftershocks. Now, everyone did talk about the earthquake. We asked people, you know, right away their experience of the earthquake. And one thing that definitely came as a surprise to me, even though I know that aftershocks happen, I know what they are, but I just didn't realize how much aftershocks influenced the lived experience of people who went through something like this, how constant they were. How they were re-traumatizing people all of the time, how they affected people's notions of what was possible or what was safe.
It's wild to think that in this case, we had aftershocks, not the initial earthquake, but aftershocks that were like 6.9 and 5 and above, which constitutes their own intense earthquake.
We literally thought it was the end of the world. And the scary thing after that was the aftershocks kept coming and coming and coming. And every time we were like, okay, we can let go now. Another one. Constant rocking and swaying. Without looking up the statistics, I don't know how long it went on for, but the quake was 15, 17 seconds, and the aftershocks were constant. They just did not stop. So it was a day that will live in my mind till I'm dead.
Another big theme that we noticed was this concept of community gathering. It's funny because I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic or dystopian literature. I love disaster movies. And there's always this very American sensibility of the lone hero or this one person, you know, fighting against all odds to overcome 100-foot tidal waves or an onslaught of hungry mercenaries. But in reality, especially in this situation, what you have is a community or a series of pocket communities coming together to support one another. It's neighbors having cookouts on their lawns because you have to eat all of the frozen goods before they spoil. There was talk of local neighborhood grocery stores and corner markets giving away food to people who really needed it. There was talk of these, you know, tent gatherings in backyards where people felt comfortable sleeping with other friends and family members and neighbors in other tents because they didn't want to go back into their homes. So as of right now, as of recording this podcast episode, it is day 110 or something of a shelter in place order because we are in the midst of a global pandemic of a strain of coronavirus that is referred to as SARS-CoV-2 that causes the disease COVID-19. And since March 17th, at least we in Santa Cruz have been told to shelter in place. And essentially, all non-essential businesses and organizations shuttered their doors and windows. And we've all been more or less either working from home or laid off since then. It is almost August as we record this. And it's been a really interesting experience to edit Epicenter videos and talk about emergency preparedness and disaster response when in the midst of a disaster that is a very, or it feels like a very slow moving disaster because it's not something that you can see. We're just told that there is this virus that has broken out and thousands of people are dying. Millions of people are sick. You know, hospitals are overwhelmed, and yet we can look out our window at home and see the neighbor's house or, you know, the corner store or the beach. So it's a really interesting dichotomy to live in, to be stuck between a natural disaster of a different kind 30 years ago and this much more broadly reaching disaster today. And I think we're not able to solicit videos right now. I have had people reach out to me. I have offered them the option of recording a video over some sort of web conferencing software like we're doing right now. But people seem less interested in doing that, whether it's for technological reasons or they're really just burnt out on Zoom meetings or teleconferencing. But we do have every intention of continuing to collect stories. We had 41 completed interviews with something like 90 individuals, because some people would do it as a couple, you know, two parts of a couple would interview together. We had volunteers at the time from the American Red Cross interview as a group of 12 or 13. So while we've reached what feels like a lot of people with the first iteration of this project, Santa Cruz has a population of like 200,000 people. So I know not all of the people who live here lived here in 1989, and I know many of those people have since passed away or moved out of the city or the county or even out of the state. Earthquakes definitely scared a lot of people off. The 89 earthquake was the 89 earthquake impacted the San Francisco Bay Area was far more devastating up there than it was in Santa Cruz, and that scared a lot of people out of California. A lot of opportunities for stories are just gone. They're lost to time. They may be collected in published, like self-published written collections. They might be in poetry books. They might be in, handwritten journal entries from 1989 or 1990, or even, you know, the 10-year anniversary, the 20-year anniversary. But as far as oral stories, you know, we don't have everyone. And some people just don't want to be interviewed. You know, they don't want to tell their story. It's too traumatizing, or they don't think it's interesting enough and they don't have anything to say. We also have a shortcoming when it comes to getting perspectives from the people of Watsonville and the Spanish-speaking population in that part of the county. And so we really want to make sure that we're doing our due diligence in trying to get those stories collected as well. Because if Santa Cruz was overshadowed by San Francisco with media attention, Watsonville was overshadowed by Santa Cruz. So a lot of Watsonville, especially the downtown area, was devastated by the earthquake. And those aren't stories that we have, partially because of the language barrier, partially because of the separation of the Santa Cruz Public Libraries and the Watsonville Public Library, and partially because of our own shortcomings. In closing, I want to extend my gratitude and appreciation to the people who contributed to this project by sharing their stories, taking time out of their day to come meet with us and talk to us, to thank Santa Cruz Public Libraries for giving us the opportunity. Thanks to all the organizations that partnered with us to help us get the word out, whether it was newspapers that we published advertisements in or the organizations that came and did presentations at the library. And if you would like to check out some of the stories that we've recorded, you can find our entire collection either at our website, santacruzpl.org, or you can go to our YouTube page and find the Epicenter playlist, and that has all of the videos neatly compiled into one place.
It's been incredible to work with you, Jen. I have learned so much, and I admire everything you've contributed to this project, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to have been involved in it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for all your hard work and your contributions and your knowledge and your research expertise and all of the amazing time that you put in on top of your regular 40-hour job to make this project a reality.
You just heard Jennifer Hooker and Kathleen Aston talking about their Santa Cruz Public Library's oral history project, Epicenter. Their work is one of the many ways the communities of Santa Cruz and Watsonville commemorated the 30th anniversary of the Loma Prieta earthquake. In telling the story of the earthquake in Santa Cruz County in this podcast, it was important for us to include these commemorations, because the earthquake, we've tried to argue, is more than just a discrete event. It's something that has lived on in unnumbered ways through the lingering responses to its physical effects and less tangibly in the memories of community members over the years. In fact, if you were looking for a way to fast-track your understanding of Santa Cruz County, from its history to its politics to its social and cultural landscape, you could hardly find a better entry point. Now, at the end of a project like this, as I take a step back, a few salient points come to my mind. The community in Santa Cruz County did come together, but it wasn't easy. Finding consensus is a worthy aim, but knowing when to compromise and when to stand firm is not always a straightforward judgment to make. Progress was made, but for many, it was not enough. One of the most painful lessons of the earthquake, and one we're still learning in 2020, is that disasters very often fall heaviest on the most vulnerable. Looking back at the earthquake, now 31 years later, in the midst of a global pandemic, and on the West Coast a historic season of wildfires, perhaps one lesson I draw above all is that strength and vulnerability don't have to be mutually exclusive. Recognizing what was accomplished while acknowledging how hard it was, and how imperfect on many fronts, can steel us with a more sober and, I think, more hopeful resolve for the challenges we face in the present, and that our children and their children will face in the future. If we are wiser from our past experiences, let's use that wisdom to continue to build, and to build something more than just a new downtown. Let's find a way to build a more equitable, more just, more sustainable world here in Santa Cruz County and, of course, beyond. Doing that work, I've tried to argue, starts with wrestling with the complexities of the past and the many complex ways we remember. A few people have told me, and I'm curious if you agree with this, that it seems like the 30th anniversary, there have been kind of more events happening around.
There really has, yes.
And why do you think that might be, that at the 30th anniversary there seems to be, you know, maybe a broader spread of interest in thinking about the earthquake?
I think it's a matter of closure. Because the 30th anniversary, we were just filling in the last vacant lot. We're almost to the point where another generation has come to maturity who either doesn't remember the earthquake or remembers it as something that their parents talked about. So that kind of puts us into a new era automatically. I mean, a generation is 20 years, and I'm okay with that. Now the earthquake is history, as opposed to living history. And we look back on it in different ways.
From the Epicenter is a production of the University Library at the University of California, Santa Cruz, in partnership with the Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History and Santa Cruz Public Libraries. You can find this in other episodes wherever it is you get your podcasts, or you can visit library.ucsc.edu/stories from the epicenter. That's where you'll also find more information about the series and about each episode, and additional resources about the Loma Prieta earthquake, including photos, videos, and interactive maps. Our series producer is me, Daniel Story. This episode was produced by me, along with Jennifer Hooker and Kathleen Aston. Thanks for sticking with us. Stay safe, and take care of each other.